The first reading is from the Vietnamese poet Du Thu Le, the pseudonym for the man who wrote these powerful words back when the Vietnam War was gathering steam in 1962. The poignant title is What I Leave to My Son.
No point in leaving you a long list of those who have died. Even if I limit it to my friends and your uncles, it won't do. Who could remember them all? My son, isn't it true? The obituaries leave me indifferent as the weather. Sometimes they seem to matter even less. How can that be, my son? I'll leave you, yes, a treasure I'm always seeking, never finding. Can you guess? Something wondrous, something my father wanted for me, although, poor man, it's been nothing but a mirage in the desert of my life. My soul will join his now, praying that your generation may find it. Simply peace. Simply a life better than ours, where you and your friends won't be forced to drag grief-laden feet down the road to mutual murder.
Second reading this morning is from Naomi Shihab Nye, a Palestinian-American who lives in San Antonio, Texas, and who is one of my favorite writers. The poem is called Jerusalem. She wrote several poems with that title. This is this particular poem, Jerusalem. She has close relatives in Jerusalem and has been there quite a number of times, and she speaks Arabic. There is a preface to her poem, which is a quotation from a Swedish poet, Tommy Olofsson. Here's the preface. Let's be the same wound if we have to bleed. Let's fight side by side, even if the enemy is ourselves. I am yours. You are mine. And then she writes, I'm not interested in who suffered the most. I'm interested in people getting over it. Once when my father was a boy, a stone hit him in the head. Hair would never grow there. Our fingers found the tender spot and its riddle. The boy who has fallen stands up. A bucket of pears in his mother's doorway welcomes him home. The pears are not crying. Later, his friend who threw the stone says that he was just aiming at a bird. And then my father starts to grow wings. Each of us carries a tender spot, something our lives forgot to give us. A man builds a house and says, I am native now. A woman speaks to a tree in the place of her son. And olives come. A child's poem says, I don't like wars. They end up with monuments. He's painting a bird with wings wide enough to cover two roofs at once. Why? Why are we so monumentally slow? Soldiers stalk a pharmacy, big guns, little pills. If you tilt your head slightly, it's just ridiculous. There's a place in my brain where hate won't grow. I touch its riddle, wind, seeds. Something pokes us as we sleep. It's late, But everything comes next. I feel almost giddy when I read the last line of Naomi Shihab Nye's poem. It's late, but everything else comes next. It's the best line of encouragement I've ever stumbled upon. It's late, but everything else comes next. The next moment, the next day, the next sunrise, the next decision, the next joy. All of it is to come. The past may have discouraged us, making us think it's too late to get anything accomplished, and yet everything comes next. These past few weeks, I couldn't help but be buoyed up by this line of Naomi Shihab Nye. While I've been reading about and hearing about the unrest in Gaza and in Jerusalem, Time magazine this last week used that word in particular, unrest, to describe the deep conflict there. It's a strange word. Unrest. When I offered the eulogy at my brother's funeral a few weeks ago, I quoted the Catholic Requiem, or Service for the Dead, since most everyone there was Catholic, save myself and my late brother, and it made simple good sense to use words that were familiar to those who had gathered around my sister and I in support. I quoted in English, "Eternal rest grant unto him, and let perpetual light shine upon him." The Latin word requiem itself simply translates as rest. That word, whether in English or in Latin, has served as a synonym for death in that tradition for over 1,000 years. The requiem is literally the celebration of rest. But interestingly, unrest, its opposite word, usually implies a lot more than merely being biologically alive. It always seems to imply conflict, fighting, disruption, riots, and aspects of real war, including in Dutilleux's painfully powerful phrase, mutual murder. The Vietnamese poet writes his poem when the Vietnam War was beginning in earnest, even though it had actually begun in 1955. I had forgotten that. Let me be clear, however. Those of us who live in the United States called it the Vietnam War and still call it that. But most of the people who lived in Vietnam called it the American War. A portrait of the conflict is thus clearly visible in just this little tidbit of nomenclature, of naming. In his poem, the anguished poet is speaking about what he would love to leave to his son as a bequest. Peace, he says, simply peace. He writes to his son that he is praying that your generation find it. Simply peace. Simply a life better than ours, where you and your friends won't be forced to drag grief-laden feet down the road to mutual murder. And he defines peace in a rather remarkable way, I think. He calls peace simply a better life than ours. Please note, he doesn't write, peace is a perfect life. He doesn't say a conflict-free life. He doesn't say a life without troubles or loss or even ordinary health problems. He simply says a better life than what we know now. A life, certainly, specifically, he says, without mutual murder. I tend to agree with his take on peace. Now, the poem by the Palestinian-American poet Naomi Shihab Nye, which you heard earlier, is moving to me for far more than the last line. Her first line knocks the socks off me, too. I'm not interested in who suffered the most. I'm interested in people getting over it. The title of the poem is Jerusalem, which is found in a collection called 19 Varieties of Gazelles, Poems of the Middle East. So we know the peoples and the places that she's talking about. It's clear. It's the very persons who are suffering unrest right now, according to a reporter in Time magazine. Naomi Shihab Nye, like me, has been to Jerusalem. We've both been to Palestinian cities, her to break bread with her Palestinian grandmother, me to visit the archaeological sites of the city of David, Bethlehem, which means, interestingly, the house of bread. Both of us have friends who are Jews and Muslims and Christians. We both have met and care for people who are Palestinians, many of whom are Christian or Druze, not Muslim, and Israelis, many of whom are not Jews by any ancestry, almost 25%. Naomi Shihab Nye knows, like I do, that genetic tests over the last 10 years have established that 80% of all the Palestinian people and 71% of all Israeli people share the same genetic pool exactly. And she knows that the game of who was there first on that land cannot ever be established, ever, ever, ever. The Arab word for Palestinian is Ash-Sha'ab al-Filistini, which clearly refers to the Philistines, who lived in that area in ancient times at the exact same time as the people who came to be known, but only eventually, as the Israelites. They share overlapping archaeology at every point. Both groups shroud their past in mythic and only semi-historical stories. One group lifts up the fleeing of a people called the Apiru from Egypt, which was eventually transformed into the fabulous Exodus saga of the Hebrews. Apiru, Hebrew. The word came from that. The other group claims for itself the transformation of the sea peoples, originally from the Aegean Sea, who were resettled from Egypt also in the days of Ramesses III, into their Philistine coastal cities of Ashkelon, Ashdod, and yes, Gaza. When someone tries to argue about the existence of their idea of God by referring to the undeniable wonders of creation, the sun, the moon, the stars, the forests, the oceans, the soaring birds, the far-seeing eyes, the dexterous hands, there's always a skeptic standing nearby who asks the same question every time. Well, if God created everything, then who created God? It's sometimes considered a facetious or even sarcastic question, but actually, at its base, I think it's a very good question. In the less theological world, English speakers are fond of proclaiming the riddle, which came first, the chicken or the egg? But in the world of the Middle East, the same kinds of questions are being asked. Who was here first? And never, as I have tried to make clear, can that question be answered. Even if you go back further and further and further, all the way back to Lucy, a common ancestor of all of us back on the African plains 3.2 million years ago. There's no way to establish it. The poet Naomi Shihab Nye refuses to have anything to do with these riddles. She makes it clear that she operates under the belief that both the chicken and the egg, both the theologian and the skeptic, and both the inhabitant of Tel Aviv and the inhabitant of Gaza share what she calls the same wound. Each carries a tender spot, she clarifies. And then she asks, but why are we so monumentally slow? Our Vietnamese father, Du Thuy Le, certainly wishes he knew. His father had promised him peace, a better life, but he never lived to see it. And all he could do with his own son was to pray that he would find some small inkling of it in his generation. He wasn't able to wrap it all up and hand it to him like he wanted to. But maybe no one can offer peace as a present. Maybe peace has to be a change of heart that is first and foremost personal, a change that rises from the individual heart, touched by the reality of universal woundedness. Nye puts her own conversion to a deep hope for peace in the Middle East this way. Soldiers stalk a pharmacy. Big guns, little pills. If you tilt your head just slightly, it's just ridiculous. She will be criticized, of course, by those who will insist that, you know, it's not all that simple. And the political and economic and ideological differences are neither ridiculous nor easy. But Nye won't have any of it. There is a place in my brain where hate will not grow. I touch its riddle, the wind, and seeds, the wind carrying the seeds. Which, of course, makes me think right away of the Nobel laureate, Wangari Maathai. The children's book about her work is called The Trees of Peace. Yet there isn't one single word in the story of The Trees of Peace that has to do with what we would call war. There's no gunshots anyplace. The book simply describes a great unrest in her heart when she returns to her own nation from her college studies in our nation. She sees the empty earth, the desert, coming closer, the poor women in the countryside losing everything. And in her unrest, she dares to imagine the planting of seeds. The seeds of trees cultured in nurseries, the saplings then transplanted all over Kenya till it's all green again. She let her unrest lead to action, and from that action and her connection to thousands of women like herself, the trees of peace eventually covered all of Kenya. When she received the Nobel Prize in the year 2004, she said this in her acceptance speech. We are called to assist the earth to heal her wounds and in the process heal our own. What wounds? Clearly, the wounds which the Palestinian-American poet Naomi Shihab Nye, via the Swedish poet, refers to as all one wound. The same wound, are her words. The wound which the late Israeli poet Yehuda Amichai referred to as the place where we are right. From the place where we are right, we said together earlier, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a jail yard. That image helps me to see faces of prisoners walking in circles in that yard, going around and around, going nowhere, trampling the earth like the deforesters trampled the Kenyan forests, making the land lifeless and flat, and getting nowhere, forever and ever, amen. But when every side in a conflict, however ancient it may be, begins to admit their mutual woundedness, begins to admit that it's not a contest to see whose wound hurts more, begins to admit that devotion to clan or to ideology is less important than devotion to peace for all, not some, then Dutilleux's son, or at least his grandson, might have a chance, at least, of finding peace in this life, and the rest of us too. My colleague, Tony Larson, in Racine, Wisconsin, has ended every service and every letter he writes and every newsletter column for the past 30-some years with these two words, peace and unrest. The words go together. Feeling the unrest of the universal wound leads to action to try and prevent future wounding, which always seems to lead to mutual murder, at least if I read history correct, whether in Vietnam or in the USA during the Civil War era or the Civil Rights era, or in that portion of the Middle East which circles around Jerusalem. Naomi Shihab Nye refuses to lose hope because all of this history is true. She also knows the story of Wangari is true, you see. The seeds of trees, the seeds of peace, the seeds of our common future, the seeds of hope, everything, in short, that is worthwhile, are not part of that history. Late as it is, she says, late as it is, everything comes next.